You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
He Pōpua. The odds are that you may not have read it, but it's most likely that you've at least heard of the controversial report. The report was labelled as segregation by South by the former National Party leader, Judith Collins. And the report even garnered a special mention in National's coalition agreement with New Zealand First, with the National Party agreeing to stop all work on He Pōpua. Amidst the controversy and outrage, one question has remained unanswered. What actually is He Pōpua? He Pōpua was a report published by a working group intended to help envision what Aotearoa would look like if we were compliant with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. The national government signed New Zealand up to the declaration in 2010 after we had previously rejected joining the declaration, despite the declaration not having any legislative effect in Aotearoa. He Pōpua was written to give advice and recommendations, but had no legal authority or legislative power. Despite this, He Pōpua has been purposefully misconstrued. I spoke to the co-author of He Pōpua, Claire Charters, about the report. Our discussion began with a question about the report's inception.
Yeah, so He Pōpua came out of a push for implementation of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, led mainly by the National Iwi Chairs Forum, which was working at the international level and domestic level to put pressure on New Zealand to sort of do something around implementation. That was also post a resolution in the General Assembly calling on states to develop national plans of action to how to realise the declaration. And then, so I think it was 2018 that Minister Mahuta made the announcement that New Zealand would be looking to develop a national plan of action. And then as one of the steps towards that development, they agreed to establish an expert working group to provide some advice on how that might happen and what that might look like. So He Pōpua fell out of that, the establishment of the working group made up of 9 people to provide some advice on what declaration consistency could look like moving into the future. And with 2040 being sort of a key date, being 200 years since the signing of Te Tiriti o Waitangi. So it put some options on the table for what you know, implementation could look like.
And I guess you kind of briefly touched on there, but I was wondering what that advice and those salient recommendations were that came out of He Pōpua in that process.
Yeah, sure. So it's separated into 5 different subject matters, so including the right to self-determination, lands, territories and resources, culture, equality, and why am I forgetting the fifth? Anyway, no matter. And so under each of these various different headings, He Pōpua puts some options on the table and puts them more or less in some form of timeline. So those kind of initiatives that might be easier to achieve in the shorter term, with then more comprehensive and systemic changes in the long term. So, for example, with lands, territories, and resources, there's ideas expressed there about Māori having jurisdiction over our marae spaces, so that Māori can determine what happens on marae. Sticking with lands, territories, and resources, there's ideas around particular types of title in conservation estate where under which Māori could have some sort of interest if the Crown can't prove that it legally or legitimately acquired that land off the former Māori tribal iwi hapu owners. Then under culture, for example, there's some steps towards greater, education around Māori culture, around te reo Māori, and so on. And then the big one that is self-determination, which is, you know, ways in which we can realise greater Māori authority over things Māori, but also over sort of potentially social services, our lands, territories and resources and so on. So some of those steps were the ones that garnered more, opposition and criticism. So moving on from kind of jurisdiction over marae spaces, thinking about ways in which we could, you know, share services, for example, service delivery. So that's what it did. Sorry, the fifth category was kawanatanga, participation in kawanatanga governance, which was about sharing authority in some spaces.
And I guess a follow-up question to that is, if any of the recommendations or if hepoko at all was legally binding or had any effect on legislation at all.
It's not as nothing specific as far as I know. I mean, it was just a advice basically to the government of that stage. Or not even advice, it was as I said, putting sort of options on the table. So no, it was never government policy. It was never for immediate legislative, I guess, action. But I'm, you know, even while not done under the auspices of hepoko, there are a few things that might go and might be consistent with it, such as the Uruwera settlement bill, which obviously came much before that, about I guess recognizing tūhoe interests in managing Uruwera. So I guess there were some ideas around that are consistent with hepoko, as I say, predating in that case. But no, hepoko itself, nothing in it became policy particularly or legislatively incorporated in any way. And at least not as a result of hepoko.
Hepoko is being kind of called divisive by certain groups and was actually labelled as separatism by South by the previous National Party leader, Judith Collins. Is there any validity to these claims? Should non-Māori be afraid of hepoko and recommendations made as a part of the work done there?
Look, absolutely not. I think hepoko is about trying to realise or trying to provide options to realise New Zealand's obligations under international human rights law. And by definition, human rights is about ensuring that you have a egalitarian, society based on equality, based on recognising the rights of minorities, of Indigenous peoples, to ensure against tyranny of the majority. In my mind, where you've got a situation where you've got a colonial state, post-colonial state, a state where Indigenous peoples experience the harms, let's just put it that way, or oppression of colonisation, and you've got resulting inequality to the extent that we have in Aotearoa New Zealand, you really need to address these things to have any form of, right? Like, it's difficult to achieve unity when segments of your society, particularly Indigenous peoples, colonised peoples, are at the bottom of sort of every socioeconomic indicia that you can see, and as a result of this history of colonisation. So it's about trying to ensure that there can be equality and therefore unity. Mm. Recognising our human rights. It also draws on empirical data over 40, 50 years from Harvard that shows that Indigenous people's circumstances improve when we have greater say and authority over services to us or over our own destinies and over our own lives. So very much about unity and not about division at all.
And finally, I guess the new coalition government, as part of the coalition deal with New Zealand First, has agreed to stop all work on hepoko. And it's interesting that it was kind of thrust into the spotlight, especially over this election period, nearly 4 or 5 years after it was first commissioned. Why do you think it has been put into the spotlight so fervently?
Well, it's funny because, for starters, the previous government under Willie Jackson had stopped any work on a national plan of action to realise the declaration. So I'm not sure that this plan is doing anything in the sense that work had already ceased well over a year ago. Secondly, I think hepoko has been used for euphemism for a strategy to stop work on, I guess, Māori co-governance, because that's how it's what it's been understood to mean. Whereas hepoko, as mentioned, was a working group advice to government. So how do you stop work that's on a report that was just advice delivered in 2019? So there's a real inaccuracy here about how that's phrased, because it's a working group report. So I guess that decision is more about not doing any more work on trying to realise the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I'm not sure whether the New Zealand government could state so broadly that it wasn't going to do anything to realise the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. So, as I say, I think the reference to Hea Puapua kind of is a way of fudging what is effectively a decision not to realise New Zealand's international human rights obligations.
That was Professor Claire Charters on her work as a co-author on Hea Puapua.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.